Having trouble finding motivated sellers? Frustrated that nobody will buy your deals? Most of whatever it is that has your business struggling can be fixed with three simple systems. Attend the Epic Coaching Intensive Live event June 18th through the 20th at Universal Studios California and install these three simple systems into your business. Turn your year around and finish strong. If your business is flourishing, you already have these three systems in place. If your business is struggling, you don't. Go to epicintensive.com to register for the Epic Coaching Intensive Live event June 18th through the 20th at Universal Studios California. It's not too late for 2015 to be your best year ever. Epicintensive.com.
This is Terrio Media.
Broadcasting from Terrio Studios in Glendale, California, it's time for Epic Real Estate Investing with Matt Terrio.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome back to the Epic Real Estate Investing Podcast, the place where I show people how to escape the rat race using real estate. Shift your focus from making piles of money to making streams of money. Change that one thing just one time, and you are on your way to financial freedom. It's not the most exciting path, I'm going to warn you, but it is the fastest. And once you get there, life then becomes exciting. So, have you signed up yet? Are you coming out here to LA? Because you know it's coming up. The Epic Coaching Intensive on June 18th, 19th, and 20th at Universal Studios California. Come on out. Make it a family trip. Hang out at the spouse and the kids can go to Universal Studios while you get your learn on. And get your systems in place to make 2015 just totally rock. Go to epicintensive.com. Epicintensive.com. And if you're not totally satisfied, you will get your money back. That's my promise. All right, I've got a great show for you today. Gonna switch gears a bit. Talk about something that we haven't really ever talked about before. But it's good information, I think. And it's about becoming your own investment bank. So on the phone, I have an expert on the topic. He is a managing director of Dandrew Partners, LLC in New York City, a commercial real estate advisory boutique firm that focuses on placing capital from prominent institutional investors into middle market distressed commercial real estate investments. He is also the co-founder and CFO of Las Vegas-based Oasis Fractionalized Real Estate Equity. That's a $15 million fund oriented solely towards the low basis acquisition, management, and redemption of broken fractionalized hard money mortgage assets with a focus towards corrective development-oriented solutions to capture equity opportunities that are traditionally unavailable in a traditional receivership or liquidation environment. Woo! That's a long sentence. He started his career and spent 5 years as an investment banker with Goldman Sachs, working with clients across a broad spectrum of industries. While at Goldman Sachs, he also collaborated closely with the firm's divisional leadership during the transition from a partnership to a publicly held company. He's a graduate of Fordham University in New York City. He has held leadership positions on several nonprofit boards and is about to grace us with his presence right here on Epic Real Estate Investing. And I'm going to go get him on the line, so I'll be back in 30 seconds right after this.
There are two steps to wealth. First, stop doing what poor people do. Second, start doing what wealthy people do. The wealthiest people do what they do best and delegate the rest. If only you had the time and resources to do it. Now you do. We're VAsForRealEstate.com, and we have some free information for you. Get the 5-step shortcut to hiring a rock star virtual assistant that will make you millions. Go to VAsForRealEstate.com. Stop doing what poor people do and do what wealthy people do. VAsForRealEstate.com.
Today on the phone, Managing Director of Dandrew Partners, LLC in New York City, Mr. Sal Buscemi. Sal, welcome to the show.
How are you? Thank you very much for having me today. I appreciate it.
Very good. My pleasure. Glad you could make it. I know you're a very, very busy guy. And we're going to talk about something rather new, something that we've never really touched on this show before. So I'm excited to get into this topic. Starting your own investment bank, I guess, is what it is.
Yes, right? That is correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Perfect. But first, before we start, just give us a little bit of your background and tell us what you're all about and how you ended up to where you are today.
Yeah, I mean, I have a very interesting background. I mean, maybe, you know, I don't find it very interesting, but, you know, it's a little different than what I think a lot of people in this space who are learning about how to become, you know, a real estate entrepreneur. I actually studied hard, got good grades, went to the top schools, and worked at the top investment bank in New York City as an investment banker. And I was doing a lot of real estate work then in my early 20s. Remember, we were talking about this before, you know, early 20s, you know, you're very busy what you were doing with yourself. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember my 20s at all working on Wall Street. I was at Goldman Sachs at the time in New York. And I really learned this business from the best. And, you know, that's really, you know, something that I'm very proud of. But I've also been able to parlay that into my own successes by what I learned there. And, you know, I just want to make sure I'm clear here. I'm not someone who was poor, broke, destitute, took a pill one night and woke up rich the next morning. There's a lot of work that went into this. Mm-hmm. And what we've been able to do is to, you know, replicate the systems that we put together to build funds. The fund is a, Matt, is a word that's abused in this industry, you know, several times over, especially the word hedge fund.
Right.
But what we are is we're a private discretionary fund, and we provide debt and equity for commercial real estate assets. And our sweet spot is below $30 million, assets below $30 million. And these are people, you know, we call them, there's two types of people that come to us. There's the people who have who are investors, who have found something interesting to buy. Maybe it's a, you know, an REO or something off market or some sort of inside knowledge that they have. And they don't have all the money they need, they come to us. The second one, and this is important, is what's happening in the market today, is that what you saw in residential foreclosures is starting to happen again in commercial. There's a lot of loans that are coming due in the next 3-4 years. Mm-hmm. And we call that a hard wall of maturity. So a lot of these commercial loans have 10-year fuses on them, 10-year maturities on them, so they have to be refinanced. The problem is, out of that $1.7 trillion in commercial loans that are coming due, half of them are underwater. So there's a tremendous amount of opportunity here if people know how to play it right and they have the right strategy to be able to really pick up some assets really cheap. But you know, we'll probably see something that we haven't seen since the RTC. Markets are still kind of upside down. Things are getting kind of weird. Some things are getting overpriced. There's a lot of foreign investors coming in. However, with the, what we call the smaller balance commercial stuff, that's where a lot of opportunity is. And that's what we do. Before that, I've ran two funds. Both of them have been distressed. One was a $30 million distressed mortgage fund called Dandrew Strategies at the time. And we were basically the kitchen sink for Bear Stearns. A lot of their subprime stuff we were buying. Mm-hmm. And we were turning around and flipping it. I started that when I was 28 years old. And then most recently in Las Vegas, we did a triage hard money fund called OFREE Fund, Oasis Fractionalized Real Estate Equity. We raised $15 million from that from another institution, and we were buying hard money funds that were facing you know, regulatory issues. They were in trouble. They did something bad, bankruptcy or you know, receivership, and we were able to buy these assets very cheaply. We were actually taking over the funds and the management of these funds and just basically selling them off, sort of like a corporate raider, if you will. Mm-hmm. But there was a happy ending to the investors because they got money that they thought they would never get back again.
Right.
From a lot of these, you know, clowns that were selling, you know, these hard money funds from a, you know, a stage here.
Right.
So that's really more or less, you know, what we do on a day-to-day basis.
Okay, perfect. So one question I have is, you know, when you talk about commercial real estate, that's a pretty broad description. So what type of commercial properties are you looking for?
We don't buy anything. We fund a lot of things. I want to make sure I make that clear.
Got it.
You don't buy anything. We don't buy anything. We fund a lot of things.
So you're acting in the sense of a lender?
As a capital provider.
Capital provider.
I mean, a lender, you think of loans. A lender, you think of debt. We do more of what we call structured finance. So, you know, there's these terms that people like to throw around in commercial that they have no idea what the heck it means. You know, sometimes we're mezzanine, sometimes we're pref, preferred equity. So, you know, we're all over the capital structure. So, you know, we're able to go much higher on an LTV due to the fact that we can do some structured, customized financial solutions.
Okay.
But really, getting back to the assets that we look at, we call them the proverbial four food groups. And what that is retail, multifamily, office, warehouse, mixed-use, industrial. So those are the four buckets. And those are the buckets that get funded today. And that's really most important. They're not always stable. Sometimes they need full open heart surgery, that's fine. You know, those are some of the, you know, the example I was talking about before was somebody who has found something interesting to buy, but they don't have all the money they need. They might need something that's a rehabber. You're not going to be able to go to a bank and get a rehab loan on an apartment complex in Memphis. Mm-hmm. After you finish it, you'll be able to do that. But it's no different than residential. It's just different loan products that is customized and fit to suit for the transaction itself.
Got it. Got it. And then you mentioned that in these four classifications or the four food groups, there's a lot of opportunity coming up. A lot of things are underwater. What's the reason that these things are underwater?
It's a very good question. You know, it's I call it the Match.com scenario. I don't know if you've ever, I know you've been married a couple times.
I've even been on Match.com before. So.
Okay. Oh, good. Okay. So we're going to do this example then, okay? Uh-huh. We'll explain it crystal clear. And when you think about it, think about when you're on Match.com, you see that photo and you think she looks like Holly Madison. You're like, oh my gosh, this is the one. She's beautiful, great, awesome. This is exactly what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, on Match.com, there's a lot of doctored photos, correct?
Yes, there are. So I can vouch.
So so we call that the current net operating income or the current NOI.
Mm-hmm.
All right, which is what assets should be underwritten on. Under is the, you know, the current NOI. But what people really found out, you know, so that was being sort of made up. What people actually were doing is that they were actually buying things off of the pro forma NOI. And so the pro forma NOI is essentially a guess or a lie. You don't have to worry about being a lie because it is. So they were overpaying for the asset. And what happened is not only were they overpaying for the asset, but credit was so loose 10 years ago. Think about 10 years ago. You know, 2005, 2006, you know, anybody could get a loan.
Right.
Commercial was the same way. They were over leveraging these properties because they were layering them with too much debt because they had a valuation that was too high.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. So now that the underwriting has gotten to be much more conservative, that underwriting now is going to be going back to the current NOI. So, you know, take it as if, okay, so if you look at it today, yeah, you bought what you thought was Holly Madison, but what you really are meeting at the Starbucks or out to dinner at a bar is really looks like Joan Rivers. Rest her soul, of course, but there's two materially different situations that you're looking at here, and that's how it was translated loosely as to what people did. There were a lot of doctors and dentists that were told things that they didn't understand, mm-hmm. where they were buying assets that they thought were cheap relative to where they are. In Southern California, you cannot compare apartment complex prices per unit the same you would in Laredo, Texas. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
So, you know, that's how people got into trouble. They were over-leveraged to begin with. People bought, they paid too much, and the banks willingly lent them the money to do that because they were competing with each other to get the loans done. That's what happened. Now these loans are underwater because their valuations do not support the debt. Sort of like if you were to do a BPO on your own house or a realtor, you know, list your house, you know, you might owe $400,000 on it, but it's only worth market value $330,000.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In this market, we don't call it a short sale. We call it, well, you're going to have to do a discounted payoff. Mm-hmm. Or the next level of opportunity is going to be bankruptcies, voluntarily, mm-hmm. you know, involuntary bankruptcies.
Right, right. It's funny, the game of semantics that goes on in real estate and finance.
Oh, it's crazy. It really is a dog-eat-dog world.
Yeah. All right, so here's the question I'm kind of getting at, and it's about commercial real estate, and you can hopefully you can appease me here, and then we're going to talk about starting your own investment bank.
Mm-hmm.
When these properties were purchased, they were purchased off of a stated income of what they thought the income was going to be when they purchased the property, owned it, owned it for a while. The income didn't turn out to be what it was supposed to be, and so now that income doesn't support the loan, and that's how they're gotten in trouble.
Exactly. Okay. What we call that is the bad operator. So, you know, and the joke in the industry, and I didn't make this up, is who is this guy bad operator, and how does he keep getting a job?
You know, right.
And so usually what you'll see is somebody's, you know, they bought it at like a 2 cap, a 3 cap, when they should have only paid probably an 8 or a 7 for it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're redlining the asset, which is similar to redlining your car. if you put it to the red line too long, pretty much it's going to blow up. So what these guys do is they mismanage it, and they become bad operators. So what do? Well, the first thing they do is they want to save 5 points, so they fire the management company. Mm-hmm. And then like they think they're saving money there. But then they don't have anybody taking, you know, now it's like there's no substitute teacher in charge of the kindergarten. There's no teacher at all, no parental supervision.
Right.
So then you have problems getting rent collected, nobody's servicing it, and pretty much you have an asset on your hand. You have a revolt because nobody's managing it. So you see that happen a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a lot of people brought in investors in here too, equity investors, and they're wiped out. So, you know, they've been tapping the equity investors for more money, capital calls, to pay the juice payments, the monthly debt payments. And guess what? They ran into trouble that way because, you know, you can only rob Peter so much to pay Paul before things catch up with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like paying one credit card with another credit card. It just doesn't make, after a while, it just doesn't, it's not sustainable.
Sure. Absolutely.
So that's where it is.
Right.
But also there's other one important part, if I can say,
please,
is that the banks are saying, you know what, I want out of these loans. You have to cash us out. You have to refinance and get us out. And that's really where the pressure is today. That's the shotgun, approach that's happening. The banks are saying, okay, your loan's up. We're not going to extend it. We're not going to pretend anymore that it's performing. We want out. And that's what's going to cause a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm. You know, the future that you're stating is all the opportunity that's coming up. And I can see that. That's clear. The other, have you considered or studied, or is this even relevant, the who those tenants and clients are going to be for the future, as far as, you know, just kind of the way the landscape of how commerce is changing, retail is changing, even just working for a company in a giant office building, even that's changing. Just kind of our culture of how we work is changing. Is that taken into consideration?
Oh, absolutely. Right now in New York City, New York has always been, you know, an anomaly. I don't think that's really appropriate. But today you have a lot of, you know, the culture is, you know, doing the virtual commuting.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is today. Instead of spending an hour commuting from, you know, somewhere in Texas to Northeast Dallas, your boss might say, just clock in, you know, and do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of spending the time on the road, spend the extra time working virtually. I'd say right now the biggest risks today are where it's consumer retail oriented. This is, you know, the Borders books, for example. This is the Circuit City. Best Buy, I think, now is like a de facto showroom for Amazon.com. I mean, my wife goes to Best Buy, finds something she likes, scans the barcode on it. There's an app that finds it on Amazon. She's able to buy it for a couple hundred bucks cheaper. I mean, she did that last month. So that's what's happening today. I would not be bullish into that. The things that are really going to be steady, Eddie, sedentary, are really going to be in your secondary markets, your smaller markets, grocery-anchored, pharma-anchored chains. That's really what it is. People need drugs and people need food. And people do not, you know, the whole premise of, you know, getting, you know, food delivered to you is not something that's really swept America yet. It probably won't be because it's considered a luxury and it's a higher cost luxury item. Retail stuff, Best Buy is kind of scary, I would say, right now. Things like that. I think if you look at it, you know, a good place to be if you're looking at retail, Costco's are still going to be there. They're going to be there for a while. And even if you get into certain, you know, government levels, we were looking at a post office deal the other day, too. You know, that has a 40-year lease on it guaranteed by the government. I mean, there's always going to be a post office there, whether it's profitable or not. It's going to be subsidized by the government. So, yeah, there's definitely certain things there. With respect to multifamily, the risk in the late credit booms and in the 2K, you know, 08, 05, I wouldn't say 08, but like 2004 to 2007, what happened was that you had a lot of people who were being offered first-time loans to buy brand new homes, and that put a lot of pressure on multifamily. And the reason for that is because, hey, if you weren't paying your rent, don't worry, no problems. You could have these no-income, no asset loans, and you'd be able to buy a brand new house with $110,000, you know, 110% mortgage, no skin out of your pocket. You have nothing into it, no down payment, and you're getting some cash at closing. So you can go out there and buy that BMW, that 3 Series, and now all of a sudden, you know, you went from being a deadbeat to someone of prominence.
Right.
that's over today. You're starting to see more of a renter nation because there's lack of certainty as it relates to employment. And people today, I think, you know, seeing what their parents went through, I think the generation, you know, anyone between the age of 25 and 40 are saying, you know what, it's better to be a renter than this home ownership stuff because I don't want to be tied down in case I lose my job or my wife loses my job.
Right.
You know, we want to be mobile.
Right. Then that would translate into it would be a good time to be a landlord as well then.
It would be. Yeah, it would be a good time to be a landlord right now if you buy right.
Right. Right. That's always a given. You got to buy right, regardless
of what
you're
doing. Well, you got to know how to buy right. You don't want to wind up like the plastic surgeons in Southern California who we had to bail out because, you know, they bought an apartment complex in Laredo, Texas, thinking that, well, it was only a time before Laredo, Texas real estate prices were going to go up and match Southern California and Beverly Hills. Well, we know that's not the case, but that people were just so desperate to do a deal, they were betting things up at the time. And whenever you get into that level of desperation, you know, emotion, you should never make any investment on emotions. And that's what these guys did.
Right.
That's what happened. So you got to buy right. You got to know how to buy right.
So you're telling me Laredo, Texas is not the next Beverly Hills?
I don't think so. And I don't want to offend any of your members of your family.
No, market.
You know, that's what it is. It's all about the market.
We just met Sal. That's my sarcasm coming through, so.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I wasn't putting you on the spot there. super. So let's talk about becoming your own investment bank. What does that mean, and how do you help people do that?
All right. We have to change. I'm just thinking that your listeners, your audience here, has been someone who has read a Rich Dad book, and they've been told to buy stuff and own it and have the bank, you know, lend money against it.
Very accurate.
That worked. Yep. That worked a long time ago, but it doesn't work today. Banks aren't lending, and you know, you don't want to be a landlord owning a bunch of residential homes. There's not a lot of nobody ever got rich owning a lot of residential homes. They're all problematic in their own certain way. I know you might want to debate that.
I do.
You can do that,
but I won't.
Okay. Okay. So you know, but a lot of people who bought these homes during the last credit boom wound up giving them back because the rents did not keep up with the prices that they paid.
Right.
That's the problem. Now, I know the housing market pretty well. I managed a $30 million balance sheet before buying a lot of these non-performing things. So I get that. Today, you have to change your mind shift and you have to think like a bank, okay? Banks, Wall Street in general, makes money if the market goes up or if the market goes down or if the market's flat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, they make record earnings when the market goes down. They make record earnings when the market is up. What you need to do is you need to think of yourself as being a bank, pooling capital together to invest into properties, not becoming a landlord, not becoming someone who deals with the proverbial tenants and toilets. You want to be a capital provider. That's how the banks win. I've been all over the country. I've been to cities, born and raised in New York City. I've been in cities as small as Silverton, Colorado. And I can tell you, Matt, that the tallest building in each one of those cities has the name of a bank on it, not a landlord. And there's a reason for it. And so what we're seeing now is that people are saying, you know what? I don't want to be a landlord anymore. I still want to participate in real estate. I know it's a great wealth creator. It's an equal opportunity wealth creator, regardless of your degrees or how smart you are or, you know, how driven you are is really what it comes down to it.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to have what we call intellectual capital. You have to know what you're doing. Or if you don't, you need to know someone who does.
Mm-hmm.
And the important part is that now it's better to become a capital provider or working with someone who is a capital provider to be able to get inside of deals where you're getting an equity stake and some points, quite frankly, and you're owner by virtue of the fact that you have an ownership stake in that without having to deal with the tenants and toilets. That's what we call equity owners.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever we do deals, depending on how much open heart surgery they need, you know, depending on how bad we have to triage them or what we think about the market, we're always going to take a 10% stake in it. You know, we're going to go for that. And we're going to do that because we know that that deal is going to be, once it's stabilized, is going to be something that we're going to be collecting checks from. So we'd rather take the bulk of our compensation in the form of what we call, and this is just an industry term, hope certificates, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really it. So imagine, you know, you're driving down your street and you see these big strip malls or office complexes, irrespective of the performance today. But imagine if you owned, you know, a 10%, you know, equity slug in each one of these. You got a profit participation in these deals. That's how real wealth is created today. So the real wealth is created by either starting your own funds, which we talk about in a book that I wrote, or, you know, aligning yourself with an institutional lender or syndicating your own capital to place into these deals. And that's how you're able to do that. You don't have to worry about putting on the hard hat and knocking tin. Instead, you're doing a lot more of the desk work, putting the deals together, becoming the paper pusher, and really getting these deals done. That's what real estate investment banking is.
Got it. Got it. And you help people do this?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, super. So I've got a pretty broad range of an audience, all the way from the person that's just kind of tinkering around trying to do their first deal to people that, you know, have $1 million, multi-million-dollar portfolio. So kind of explain to me, because we're coming up against the time right now, explain to me who your ideal client is and how they should get in contact with you if it's a good fit.
Okay, this is a great question. The ideal client for us is someone who has or knows of someone who is an experienced real estate operator, and they're all over the place. I mean, if you live in any city in the country, unless you're living in the, you know, the Mojave Desert, you're going to find a commercial owner-operator. It's very easy to do that. There's LinkedIn groups that can do that, and you can align them with. And what they all need is that they're very good at managing properties, but they're not good at finding capital. So the ideal client for us is someone who's experienced, who is looking for money to be able to buy more stuff, more commercial stuff. That's our ideal client. The ideal client that you'll see change over time is going to morph into more so the guy who has his hair on fire and he's calling 911 because the bank is making him buy his note back at a discount. You're going to find a lot of those. You're going to see a lot of what we call DPO opportunities, discounted payoffs, or short sale opportunities. But we never want to use the word short sale with commercial because it's not professional. right, Matt?
Right. That's right.
So,
that's
you know,
right. Got to get the semantics correct.
Yes, exactly. You got to wear the right clothes to the party. Mm-hmm. So we talk about this, you know, how to be able to do this in the form of being, you know, pooling your own hard money together to do this on the first book of three that I've just released. I have one other that's coming out that's called Raising Real Money. But the book that we're talking about right now, people want to learn more about this business, they can get a free copy of this. We're only giving away 20 copies because that's all we have left, by going to makingtheyield.com, makingtheyield.com, and they can basically get a copy of that, and then, you know, they'll get a lot of some cool infographics and stuff to do to start working on this and finding these opportunities today. You're going to see a lot of these opportunities. You're going to see a lot of people who say, hey, you know what, I'm a great contractor, I'm a great handyman, I'm very poor with money, I don't have any good credit, but you know what, I know this 100-unit apartment complex down the street, this guy's not running it well, he lives overseas or he lives in California, I'm in Laredo, Texas, you know, I can buy this if only I had the money. And that's where we come in. You know, we provide the discretionary funds. We're not a bank.
Right.
Our rates are a little higher, so we're going to be somewhere, you know, we'll help factor that in. It determines on the risk, of course. But we'll be somewhere between a 9 and a 13 for that. But again, it's the availability of capital that counts rather than the cost of capital. If your credit was good, then you wouldn't be talking to us.
Right.
But also, you know, if you know you're going to make a big chunk of money, $500 million down the line, you know, you don't care how much you're paying for capital. You're only worried about the access to capital. So that's really how it works there. And it's a great, you know, there's other institutions like us out there. You know, they expect you to be experienced doing that, but we're a little more patient because we drive a lot of our deal flow off of our intermediary base, our base of students that we train to be intermediaries, and it works out really well. So,
super.
You know, it's really, really good stuff. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Very interesting. Very enlightening. Thank you, Sal, for your time.
Thank you, Matt.
Yes. And if we have some response on this episode, which I'm pretty sure we do, I've already got an idea of a couple of our audience members that would be very interested in this. And we'll have you back.
Wonderful. I really appreciate that.
Perfect.
Matt, thank you so much for the time. Thank you.
You bet. You bet. That's Sal Buscemi. Go to makingtheyield.com. He's got 20 copies of his book there by the same title, Making the Yield. Go ahead and get that, and we'll be right back.
Attention! Attention! Shocking website reveals that shocking websites aren't really that shocking.
All kidding aside,
go to findmotivatedsellersasap.com to get the inside scoop on how the nation's most successful real estate investors really find their deeply discounted properties. Go to findmotivatedsellersasap.com. Deeper discounts, less secrets.
findmotivatedsellersasap.com.
That's it for today. I'll see you next week or catch me tomorrow on Turnkey Real Estate Investing. I'm Matt Terrio, living the dream.
You've been listening to Epic Real Estate Investing, the world's foremost authority on separating the facts from the BS in real estate investing education. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to visit iTunes and share your thoughts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time here at Epic Real Estate Investing with Matt Terrio.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.